The Athletic.
Back in January, Xavi announced he would be stepping down as Barcelona boss at the end of the season, citing the role as a cruel job that wears you down. But last week, he and Barca changed their minds. Yet another twist in a rollercoaster season for the Catalans. So why did Barca perform a dramatic U-turn on Xavi's future? How strong a position is he in now? And can Xavi be backed in this summer's transfer market to the level he now expects? I'm Ayo Akimolere. Welcome to the Athletic FC podcast. All right, with us today, we have The Athletic's Thomas Hill, Lopez Menchero, and also our Barcelona writer, Paul Belus, as well. Paul, you've written a big piece on The Athletic where you share details of the three key meetings that resulted in the U-turn on Xavi's future, not least the emotional chat at Joan Laporta's house. Can you give us a summary of how it all panned out? I'm not going to lie, it all sounds pretty bizarre.
It is actually like really, really bizarre and weird. It's something that in many ways, like, we did expect here in Barcelona, because it was something that we could sense, like, from club sources when we tried to talk to them in terms of, like, who are they looking at as their next manager. They were, like, really calm and really chill. Like, we think that Xavi is going to reconsider and that he's going to stay and that he's going to be the best option that we have for next season. And then, like, if you heard that Xavi on press conferences during the last couple of months, he wasn't being too bold. He wasn't being like, look, there's no chance I'm staying next season. And then all these, like, pointed out, like, or, yeah, pointed towards, like, a potential reconsideration on, like, his decision to stay. But what we didn't expect was what happened last Wednesday, basically, which is this sort of, like, late night meetings, three, like, a board meeting in the morning with a lot of people, like, asking for Xavi, like, to be not sacked, but, like, just not to count on him for next season. And then, like, Xavi meeting with Deco in an emergency meeting in the training facilities. And then all of them going back to Joan Laporta's house in the heart of Barcelona just to make the final decision. It shows a bit, like, the shambolic state that the club is in, like the messy state, and how at the end of the day, like, the decision makers are just three, four people in there, which are Joan Laporta, Deco, and Joan Laporta's biggest advisors there, despite the fact that multiple board members had doubts over if it was good for the club to keep trusting Xavi. At the end of the day, when the biggest decision makers made this emergency meeting in late hours of Wednesday at Joan Laporta's house, they decided that the best gamble or the best choice that they had was just to keep Xavi. And, like, Xavi was on board with that. Xavi, he says that he's felt like a huge support from the dressing room, and that's what made his mind change, basically. But let's see how it goes. But I see that as, like, Xavi staying in a more weakened position by far.
Thomas, you know, are we surprised that Barca made this decision? I mean, the positives are, look, Barca went on a decent winning run in La Liga. They're currently second, just behind Real Madrid, who've had a phenomenal season. But, I mean, I don't know what your point of view is from those two Champions League legs, but we saw some fight in this Barcelona squad.
Yeah, I mean, the first leg against PSG was obviously great. It really felt like it was a leap forward, as Laia Cervello Herrero wrote, in terms of Barca's Champions League aspirations. That obviously gets punctured by the second leg, Araujo sending off, Xavi sending off, Cancelo giving away that penalty, and then the Clasico defeat. I guess the surprise for me was, even if that was an open secret, as Paul says, that it seemed as if Xavi was going to reconsider his decision, it clearly would have felt much better announcing that during the 13-match winning run they went on after he made his initial announcement, than when you've lost the league, lost the Champions League effectively. It will be interesting to see what happens from now on. But as Paul says, it does seem like the kind of decision where Xavi doesn't win, arguably Laporta doesn't win. Maybe he's kind of looking to cover himself a bit if results don't go to plan next season after another summer of tight spending. But yeah, it's a massive U-turn, even if there were suspicions that Xavi was going to make that decision.
Yeah, Paul, just, I mean, we did a podcast on this, and, you know, last time we spoke about Xavi, he was leaving, talking about the job being cruel, you know, the fact that it wears you down. What on earth has changed his mind?
That's like the best question, and like what we all asked Xavi like on the press conference where he explained all his reasoning. Because like deep down, all the reasons that he exposed, like to explain like why he was leaving and why he couldn't take it anymore, they are still there. Like the club is like still going to be cruel. The entorno, the atmosphere around the club and inside the club is still going to be toxic. Now it's more clear than ever that he has like his own detractors inside the club, and he knows that. And yeah, basically, like if the ball doesn't end up in the back of the net next season, problems are going to emerge again, and Xavi's going to find himself like in the very same situation that he's seen himself this season. So basically, like the public version that he is offering is that the dressing room has shown him like his full support and they want him to stay. I don't think that's a lie. I think this is true, because like this is like sort of a good dressing room. It's not like a strong dressing room, like you like a strong personality wise dressing room. I wouldn't say that this was a group of players that wanted Xavi out, basically because some of them were given like the chance in first team football thanks to Xavi. But I think that inside the group of players, they know that in terms of authority inside the club, Xavi is not at his best place. It all started like this season on a Champions League game in Antwerp, which was like a meaningless game because Barcelona had already like certified his pass to the next round. But like Xavi basically wanted to rest like the big players, and the board, the executive board, just interfered in the squad selection, and they told Xavi, look, you have to bring all the good players in there because we need to win this game to get the money prize from the Champions League. So, and Xavi said, okay, so I'm doing this. So like in terms of like how this is seen across the group of players, like you lose a lot of power in there. And I think that with how all the events have unfolded on these last weeks over his continuity and him staying, this hasn't helped him either. So yeah, I wouldn't say that the dressing room is not supporting him, because they are. But at the same time, I'd say that they know that Xavi is not in a strong position inside the club. Yeah, let's see how it goes next season. But they know that if the results doesn't go well, it's going to be a tough situation for Barcelona too.
Yeah, very quickly, Paul, I don't know if you've noticed, but like I feel like Xavi's been getting quite a fair few yellow cards of recent. And I think, please jump in on this, Thomas, as well. Like, I wonder if this is a spillover of the frustration he's feeling. I wonder how that relates to his players. I don't know if the Spanish media have picked up on it, but we just literally looked at the stats. Xavi, as a Barcelona player, 88 yellow cards in 828 games, one every 9.4 games. Xavi, as a Barca coach, 24 yellow cards in 132 games. That's one every 5.5 games. So as a coach, he's getting booked more. I mean, how does that also affect the players on the field in terms of his authority?
That has an impact as well. And I think that on the Champions League second leg, that was poor from Xavi, because like his sending off arrived in a moment where the team needed him the most, because the team was left out with 10 men. They need like leadership on the pitch and outside the pitch. And then he just went mad and started kicking like all these Champions League banners. And he was rightly sent off. So it's something that it's been on Xavi, and that has been like talked around Xavi inside the club. They know that Xavi needs to improve, that Xavi himself know that. But I think that somehow like, yeah, it just speaks volumes by the fact that Xavi doesn't have like everything in control as he would dream to. And yeah, as I was saying, I don't think that this is going to change soon. And another thing that for me, like, is bad, and that's not all down to Xavi, but like as Tomas was saying here, like the PSG game, like especially like the second leg, and the League Clásico, and like La Liga's Clásico that basically granted Real Madrid the title like last week, they had an impact on the picture that executives have on Xavi. And that's wrong, in my opinion. That's wrong, because like if you believe that Xavi is like the right manager because how they play and like what he has in mind, it doesn't have to be that related to like the last couple of results. Like after two seasons at the club, you need to have like a clear picture of what Xavi is, what he can bring to the team and what he cannot. And if you want him, you have to take him before those games. Because if you heard like at President Joan Laporta before that tragic week for FC Barcelona, like even on the record and off the record, he was like saying, no, Xavi is like the best option that we have. We want to convince Xavi to stay. And after this week, like people inside the executive board were not that sure. That's not great for the club. I mean, you cannot base like the future of the club in like two games. You have to see a bit more like the longer picture. And that's another thing that makes me think that Xavi doesn't have the best spectrum to work in here.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one, isn't it? You've got a board that aren't necessarily confident in your ability, Thomas, but also, you know, what kind of demands can he make in this position? I mean, what is that saying to a manager? You're just here as a pawn fundamentally, you know?
That's exactly right. And that's why Paul says there that it leaves Xavi in an extremely weakened position. I mean, part of me wonders if Xavi has made this decision to stay a little bit because he himself might acknowledge that he's not necessarily cut out for some of the other top jobs in Europe. I mean, this is a huge club for him. Obviously, it's the club of his life. But even apart from that, it's hard to see him landing at another European giant anytime soon, really, after this experience. So from my point of view, I do wonder if there's a bit of that in Xavi's decision, thinking, okay, maybe I can turn this around in the year I've got left, see what I can do with this team. Yeah, I mean, it does feel a bit chicken and egg in terms of the Barca board. I think, you know, sources were telling Paul that Xavi wasn't in a position to make demands given recent results. Xavi has been backed in the transfer market before in 2022, you know, went on to win the league. I think it's going to be a pretty tight summer. So it will be interesting to see how he reacts, but he's still working in the same constraints he was working in before.
Yeah, I just wondered, Paul, what are the sort of managerial options there are available? You know, look, Bayern Munich have struggled to get a coach and they've got a fair bit of money in their pocket. Barcelona don't have much money. I mean, if there even was a top coach out there, can Barcelona even afford someone like that?
Yeah, no, that's like, I think, in my opinion, like the main reason why like Laporta wanted to make Xavi reconsider his decision, because they had like a quick look on what was available and the options that they could afford and managers that were willing to join Barcelona were not entirely convincing. There was Hansi Flick, which is also like represented, his agent is a good friend of Laporta, which is Pini Sahavi. That plays a big role in Barcelona, these sort of like relationships, as like you all might know. But with Hansi Flick, there was the hurdle that he doesn't speak Spanish or English. So that was something that wasn't like giving any confidence to the Barcelona's board. Then was Thomas Tuchel, that his dressing room situations at Bayern, Chelsea and PSG didn't offer sort of trust to Barcelona either. There were not like good options. They couldn't invest in a new manager such as, I don't know, Roberto De Zerbi, that was like in contention at some point. And like the dream option, if I'm honest with you here, is Luis Enrique. This is the dream option for Deco, the dream option for Joan Laporta. Well, like if we talk about dreams option, this is Pep Guardiola. But like Pep Guardiola is like in another level for Barcelona.
But also his demands would be ridiculous in terms of how he'd like to restructure that team.
Yeah. But then like with the terms of Luis Enrique, I don't think so. Well, his like contract expires next summer. I think that Xavi's continuity for one more year, like especially with Luis Enrique having said over this tie against Barcelona that he would like to come back at some point of his life in Barcelona and to manage Barcelona back again. I wonder if that was seen like as a sort of like, well, that's like a positive sign for us from the executive board at like Barcelona. And yeah, in the worst case a scenario, if Xavi stays one more year and things doesn't go as well as planned, maybe they can wait for Luis Enrique and let's see if next summer he is available. But again, I don't think that the PSG ownership will make things easy for Luis Enrique just to leave on a free next summer and like in a non-painful way. So let's see how it happens. But I think that Luis Enrique and his contract is something that the executive board has had in mind.
You're listening to the Athletic FC podcast with Ayo Akinwalere.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Let's look ahead to this summer. I guess we've established that Barcelona don't have much money. So then the conversation is there, could there be a fair few outgoings? And who potentially do you see as relatively surplus to requirements at this point in time, Paul?
Yeah, so that's a piece that I'm actually working now, if I'm honest.
All right, don't give us too much of a scoop because I want people to read it, but you know.
It's going to be out tomorrow, so it's going to be out on Thursday, so I think that all the listeners are going to be able to read to that piece. So yeah, no, I think that people at the club like expect or are more than willing like to have big sales this summer in the club, and I think that the biggest name or like the name that ticks all the boxes is Ronald Araujo, basically, because as much as he's like a really valid member of this squad, I think that he's a perfect like partner for the young succession, Pau Cubarsí. His skill set is like really appreciated and like needed inside this team. But he's the player that, in terms of like market value, he might be among the top four players in that Barcelona squad. He's young in terms of like any club. It would make sense to make an invest on him because he still has his best years like ahead of him. And the most important point is that he's in talks over a new contract. He's overdue a new contract. He's not among the top earners in the squad. He's a captain. He's an important voice in the dressing room, and he deserves a new contract. But can Barcelona really offer that? Or should Barcelona really offer that? If you have like a good offer from another club, bringing in like money that you can cash in like as instant profit because you paid almost nothing for Araujo back in 2018. So basically any money that comes in for Araujo is like instant profit for the club. I think he's the sale that makes more sense, also because you have a lot of center backs and you have a lot of like good options in there that you could compensate the tough loss as much as Araujo would be. And apart from Araujo, let's see, because there's going to be like the usual talk about Frenkie de Jong is like death, taxes, and Frenkie de Jong potentially leaving Barcelona. But I don't think that he's going to leave because his mindset is quite clear on staying. In a de Jong territory, I think that Lewandowski is in there as well because some people at the club would like to see his contract off the books, but he doesn't want to leave and he doesn't have a clear replacement inside the club. So then we'll see what happens. But I think that if we speak about big sales, one name that we need to keep an eye on is Ronald Araujo for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the Lewandowski one's funny, isn't it, Thomas? Because, you know, this is an aging player and the quality is still there. I think he's third or fourth in the top scorers list in La Liga this season. But he also costing Barcelona a lot of money. And for that, for the output and a potential declining output, you can understand why conversations are there as to why he possibly shouldn't stay for a bit longer.
Yeah, he kind of seemed like this, kind of Van Persie-esque signing when he arrives in 2022, you know, this striker who comes in, wins you the league in a year. I guess the problem was he was given this long contract as a 33-year-old, which now, as Paul's saying, seems like a bit of a millstone around Barca's necks. He never really seemed like a kind of typical Barca player in terms of his hold-up play, the way he's not quite as involved in how the team works as maybe Barca would like a striker to be. Clearly, the crucial thing is he's still scoring goals, as you say, still only three other players, I think, in La Liga who have scored more goals than him this season. And there's not many other better options. Vitor Roque has struggled a bit since coming in January. Will Barca really be able to attract another centre-forward? Will they be able to afford another centre-forward? Probably not. So from my point of view, I think he probably will end up staying in the summer. But he remains this problem. He's kind of this interesting symbol a bit of Barca's want of new signings in contrast to their La Masia made talents, right? He had this kind of clash on the pitch with Lamine Yamal earlier in the season, which he kind of played down when it looked like he'd kind of refused to shake Yamal's hand. But clearly, there is a bit of an odd thing if you've got like a 16-year-old and a 35-year-old next to each other on the pitch in the same team. That sort of does illustrate a little bit the kind of confusion behind the scenes in terms of transfer policy, who are the players you're really trying to elevate in that team.
Yeah, Paul, Thomas makes a really good point there in terms of Lewandowski. And I guess you look at Torres as well, who doesn't look like he's lit Barcelona a light at this moment in time. You know, is he yet another symptom of the issue around money at Barcelona? Who on earth can they bring in, as Thomas said, who's going to offer you that kind of quality without having to shell a lot of money for them?
Yeah, yeah. They don't have a better option because there's Ferran Torres behind him. And I mean, I don't want to like highlight or expose the signing of Vitor Roque because he is 19 and he's expected to go through like an adaptation process. But he was brought in January like to start like learning the ropes and seeing like how Lewandowski worked and just to try to prepare himself for that step up. And he hasn't delivered. Basically, he hasn't impressed in training. Club sources still see him like really behind the scale. He needs like a bit more of like preparation. And even like club sources, they don't dismiss that they plan to loan him out next season. So as much as this is normal in a 19-year-old, like should have Barcelona spent 30 million plus 31 in potential add-ons in a player that you don't know that can be that ready. That's another question to place at Barcelona, because now they are not in a position to attract like any other striker. Basically, money is going to be tight. And as far as we know, like if they have some money, Xavi's priorities are not going to be focused on the striker position. So yeah, as much as Lewandowski is like a controversial figure in there in terms of like how his contract fits, I don't see him leaving because of the option that he has behind him, basically.
This is the Athletic FC podcast with Ayo Akinwalere.
I mean, all this going on in the background whilst Real Madrid are just ticking over really nicely, aren't they? In a good position in the Champions League and likely to win La Liga. Meanwhile, as you said, Thomas, Yamal's, 16 years old, next to Lewandowski, who's 35 years old. It doesn't seem like their strategy seems as aligned as Madrid's.
I think the worry is, as you were saying before as well, Ayo, like that thing of throwing in young players like Kubasi, like Yamal into these big Champions League ties. Barca are clearly looking for quick fixes, and those young players have been brilliant. I mean, don't get me wrong, I think that's been one of the big positives of Xavi's time in charge has been how he's brought through those youngsters, which is maybe something that another manager might not have done. But yeah, the example of Vinicius Rodrigo as well, I think there's an obvious parallel to be made there with Vitor Roque. The fact is, Vinicius Rodrigo, they needed so many years to actually get up to this standard where they are so consistent. Even Rodrigo now is still having ups and downs, whereas Roque, it really did feel like a bit of a kind of short-term, let's bring him in January to do a job for us. And that just hasn't been the case. I guess Madrid have recruited their young players from elsewhere. Barca, clearly La Masia is still hugely important to them. I think they've got to focus on that if they want to make up that gap to Madrid anytime soon.
Mario Cortegana, basically, he's just done a really lovely piece on Vinicius Jr., Paul, and just showing you how important this player is, you know, in Champions League semi-finals or in the latter stages of the big competitions. He's a big player, you know, who steps up in the big occasions. And that's also something that's taken time. There was a time when people were talking about him being unreliable, didn't quite know what you were going to get. Is that the deep problem with Barcelona right now? I looked at Yamal crying after the Champions League exit. That's the first time he's experienced this. And, you know, this is the first time a lot of these players, as good as they are experiencing the big stage. There's a huge learning curve still to go.
Yeah, absolutely. There's like a risk in there, which is like if the team doesn't keep up like playing well and improving, maybe they are not going to see themselves in that position to play Champions League quarterfinals in the future. Because Barcelona hadn't reached that stage for a while. And those players, like, as much as you mentioned, like, Lamine Yamal crying after the PSG game, that's good for them. That's really good for them. And, like, Barcelona cannot focus right now on, like, having a Vinicius tomorrow, having a ready-made player, because they cannot afford that. They have to create them. And they have, like, and, like, the way to go through this is, like, to improve how they play, like, start from the basics, start from, like, more simple targets, which I think that this is a problem inside Barcelona, because like since Joao Laporta take over, like they had all these grand ambitions and like these big projects to become like an elite club as soon as possible. And of course, I'm sure that they all want like that Barcelona can compete against the biggest forces in Europe. But right now, that's not realistic. And that's not what this squad like needs to cope with this sort of pressure, like to be like among Europe's best four teams. Because like Barcelona, I think that somehow, I mean, they have been lucky with the Champions League draw this season, because they had like an easy group. As much as last season they had the toughest group in the Champions League, this season probably they had the easiest group that they could find. And then they played against a Napoli side that was struggling as well. And they played against PSG in the quarterfinals. So yeah, the main focus has to be like to keep improving these youngsters and like to make sure that they can see themselves playing in the big stage. As much as they do that, I think that they will be granted like the platform that they need to once have like these ready-made players to go to Bayern Munich Stadium and score a goal in the semi-final of the Champions League.
Yeah, I'm going to jump you a quick question at Thomas on Real Madrid in a second, but Paul, just very quickly from my perspective, I mean, Joan Laporta made this incredible grand reshaping of Barcelona a few years ago, right? Remortgaging the club. I mean, there's so many gambles. How do Barca fans feel about those huge gambles right now, and especially where the club are at this moment in time?
Yeah, now when you look back and this summer of levers, like with all the investments that Barcelona made, you could see that none of those signings were like really amazing. I mean, some of them like has like delivered like some good performances, and they are players that are gonna stay beyond the season for sure. But like the biggest impact that Barcelona has had over the last three seasons have been like Gavi, Lamine Yamal, and Pau Cubarsí, probably, which are players that come from the youth ranks. So Barca fans know that the club has made like a huge gamble, and that somehow it hasn't paid off in the way that like they expected to. As Tomás pointed out earlier, I think that La Masia provides this sort of like reassurances that somehow there's still something pure inside the club, and something that they can hang on, and something that they can trust, and they can have like a focus to go to the matches every week to see Pau Cubarsí and Lamine Yamal and Gavi, how they progress, or Pedri. I don't want to forget anyone here. So yeah, I think that there's a sort of disappointment. There's a realization that they cannot compete with the likes of Real Madrid, even more like with Real Madrid getting near to bring Kylian Mbappe in next season. But there's still elements to trust that Barcelona someday can be a competitive team in the Europe's elite at some point.
Yeah, but that's the question. How long can we believe in the La Masia model, which is fruitful for sure for talent? In the meantime, you look at the other side, you know, Real Madrid are ready to potentially welcome one of the greatest players in the world onto the pitch, steamrolling ahead. I mean, how far are Barcelona from catching their rivals to that, you know, to really battle as one of the teams in Europe's elite?
I think in terms of the divide in Spain, you know, let's not forget, we're never too far from a Real Madrid crisis. At the moment, Madrid look like the best run club in the world at the moment. But who's to say, you know, next season they suddenly lose a couple of games, they lose a Clásico, and suddenly the balance of power looks like it's shifted.
You're saying football's fickle?
Well, yeah, you know, I would never say that, but something like that. But I do still think the gap institutionally, which I think we've talked about before, does definitely seem to be wider. It does seem like Madrid have a clearer plan off the pitch than Barca. But having said that, as Paul was saying, getting to a Champions League quarterfinal in itself was pretty momentous for Barca in the post Lionel Messi era. There's always a way forward. La Masia provides a way forward, maybe. But yeah, it's certainly true that in certain aspects, Madrid do look to be kind of streaking ahead at the moment.
Okay, fantastic. Paul, thanks for your time. And also Thomas as well, thanks for joining us. And do not forget to rate and review the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We're back tomorrow.
The Athletic.